Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for choosing King Jordan Radio for this Easter final day of March, March 31st, 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to discuss the Jody Harris trial, George Zimmerman, and much, much more. Here to discuss that with me, out of Arizona, is the one and only Vladimir Gadzik. Vladimir, thank you for coming on the show tonight. How are you?
Well, thank you for having me so much. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy Easter to you, King.
Happy Easter right back to you. And, of course, we were on. You came on the show last week, and it was great having Mr. Herman and Mr. Sherman, and we had a great show the other night.
Yeah, my name is the only one that doesn't rhyme.
Yeah. speaking about your name, and before we get into all the other good stuff, let's talk about your blog and your Twitter and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, thank you. I have a blog. It's called prisondemocracy.com. It's the URL, just like it sounds. And the point of the blog is, you know, America, the country that everybody from Eastern Europe, where I'm from, where my family is from, looked at America as the land of the free, the land of liberty. It's the country that defeated Hitler. It's the country that defeated the Imperial Japan. It's the country that defeated the USSR. And we look at Ronald Reagan, and not just Ronald Reagan, but a lot of the American presidents as the ones who liberated us from totalitarian communism. And it's all of Eastern Europe. Ronald Reagan to us is kind of like what Abraham Lincoln is to a lot of Americans. He freed us from the communists. But America has gone from that. America has gone from the land of the free to a factory prison industry. We have a country now that incarcerates something like six times the world average. And we have one out of every 20 people on earth is an American, but one out of every four prisoners in the world is an American. And that's what my blog is about the prison democracy, the factory prison system. And I'm also very active on Twitter, and that's at VLGA, VLGA.
Yeah, I tell you, social media has really stepped up in terms of a way of life right now. Would you agree?
Oh, completely, and it's for the better. Social media is one of the few media, particularly Twitter, that's not controlled by mass corporate media. It's not controlled by, and certainly some of it is influenced by big money, but it's more grassroots. It's more from the bottom up rather than the top down. So that's why I'm a big fan of it.
Totally agree. Okay, let's get into the Jody Arias clip, the Jody Arias trial. Before we do that, let me play a little clip, and then we'll come back on the other side, and we'll talk about that, okay?
Is this battered woman expert the final defense witness who may hold Jody's life in her hands playing dirty pool? Is she essentially accusing the victim, Travis, of being responsible for his own death? Let's debate it with our expert legal panel. And we're going to start with Monica Lindstrom, a former prosecutor for the prosecution out of Arizona.
Hi, Jane. You know, I don't think that she's making him look like a really, really bad person. There are some bad facts there, especially with the email to the Hughes and the Hughes warning Jody to stay away from him because he's manipulated at least one woman in the past and wasn't really nice to her. But that's just one bad fact. When we pile up all the other bad facts against Jody, Travis doesn't come out looking like a bad guy at all. She had a lot of power. The expert's talking about this power balance. Well, she's the sexual balancer, the sexual power there that has a lot in that balance, and it kind of tips the scales towards her. So what I see is everything the expert is saying, I don't think it's going to be that difficult for Juan Martinez to just turn it around and point it right at Jody instead of at Travis Alexander.
Renee Sandler for the defense. No, this case is about power and control and manipulation. And you have religion in the midst of it. You had a superior in this religious experience, Travis Alexander, over Jody. And so the power, the manipulation, the subtleties, the direct emails, the way that he used her and manipulated her for sex is absolutely crystal clear, and this witness is going to do wonders for Jody Arias' defense.
Well, let me bring in the religion theme, because it was a major theme today as part of this character assassination of the victim, Travis Alexander, the domestic violence expert. Described Jody as a meek, vulnerable person, lured into the Mormon faith by Travis, the spiritual leader. She made him look bad, describing Travis as a corrupting role model who baptized Jody, challenged her to read the Book of Mormon, and then forced her to have oral sex with him in a parking lot within 2 weeks of meeting. Listen to this.
He's in the priesthood of the Mormon Church, so he's seen as a spiritual mentor. He challenges her to read the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
And then he tells her that he's horny, and they have oral sex. She performs oral sex on him in a car in a parking lot. It was incredibly significant that Mr. Alexander was doing the baptism. She's got a spiritual mentor who's telling her that this sex isn't so bad and they can do this. She called him a spiritual guide.
You got to buy this argument, though, that Jody is this meek wallflower who's so easily manipulated. Look at her in the interrogation room. Does she have any problems with self-confidence as she does a headstand in the interrogation room just before she's arrested, or flips her hair around to get a bouncy look for the mugshot? I mean, Jordan Rose, attorney, this is sort of like rewriting history. And unfortunately, the jury hasn't seen a lot. They haven't seen the headstand.
I think it's complete revisionist history, and while they haven't seen the headstand to show that this woman is hyper-confident, they have seen her on the stand for 19 days, and she only expressed confidence. She was not a meek person, not at all on the stand.
All right, Brian,
she is absolutely, this is crazy, and to relate the modern religion with
this, what's crazy is to call her hyper-confident. Listen.
Obviously hyper-confident. I mean, this woman thinks she can get away with
this
murder.
This woman is not hyper-confident. She's sitting in this courtroom. Now she's quiet. Listen, don't tell me she's hyper-confident because she did a yoga pose in the interrogation room, okay? You look at her in this courtroom. You look at her in this courtroom, and you see a woman that's mousy sitting there with her eyeglasses. And here's the bottom line. This witness is not character assassinating Travis. She talks very matter-of-factly. She's an expert in her field. She's a pioneer in her field. And what she says makes sense. And I'm telling you right now, it's resonating with this jury. And to say otherwise would be to deny the reality of her testimony.
Okay, Vlad. First off, what is your opinion on what you just heard? And what is your opinion on Alice, the witness, the final witness for the defense?
Right. Well, from the clip that I just heard, it's hard to take a prosecutor, Ms. Lindstrom, very seriously when she can't even pronounce the word especially correctly. But having said that,
yes,
you know, if you're going to go on the air and use a word, pronounce it correctly. But having said that, though, her opinions, as is typical for most of, or if not all, the lawyers who I hear on mass media organizations, it's routine. It's boilerplate. It's almost like they're reading from a script. And the script is to hate Jody Arias because it sells. It simply
sells.
And
everything the defense is doing.
Yeah, everything the defense is doing. What it is, it's, and this is a phrase I used last week on your show, is this is reality television on steroids. And everybody knows who watches reality shows is you got to have a good villain to make the show interesting. And Miss Arias is that good villain. She is that interesting villain, and everybody loves to hate her, and that sells. And then you have lawyers or experts or whoever else come on these expert panels and say, you know, they carry the party line. And that's exactly what it is. Hating Jody Arias is the party line. Now, a couple of things that I heard that really kind of irritate me is all these experts who've never, ever met her, lawyers, and we're not even talking about psychologists, but let's say lawyers, just random journalists, finally have figured out Jodi Arias' personality. They can say beyond a letter of a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, she's a psychopath, she's a sociopath, she's a narcissist. All they know about her is what they've seen on TV. That in no shape or form entitles anybody to decide whether she's ultra-confident or a sociopath or a narcissist. Not to mention none of those characters are even the least bit relevant to whether or not she's guilty of any of the crimes. But beyond that, it is flat-out character assassination. It is a lazy, silly, party-line attempt to discredit a defendant from getting a fair trial. And one of the things that we heard, too, was about the jury's not going to hear about the headstand. But what about the fact that the prosecutor was continuously objecting to the expert witness testimony? And that's something that you had asked me about the expert witness. And I thought her testimony was phenomenal. And what Mr. Prosecutor did is exactly the worst thing you could have done. Because now a jury is going to dying to know what's in those emails. But the prosecutor was objecting, what, every 3 seconds, every third of a second? So now they're wondering, what is the prosecutor hiding from the jury? Right? What else could be in those emails that the prosecutor is hiding? He spent all these weeks convincing the jury endlessly that she's a liar, that there's no evidence corroborating her claim. Well, guess what? It's there. It's there. And the prosecutor was hiding it. And what I would like to know is this person on the clip you just played talked about the fact the jury's not going to hear about Ms. Arias' headstand in the interrogation room, which is meaningless. It's gibberish. But why aren't they going to hear about how the Detective Flores and the prosecution refused to turn over something like 8,000 text messages and emails to the defense, and the defense had to go to bat to actually get those emails.
Oh, really? I didn't know about this. Can you fill our callers in on this? We didn't know about this. Maybe you could shed some light on that?
About the emails?
Well, you said something about text messages that they didn't turn over to the defense. That's accurate?
Right. There's actually a story that was Michael Kiefer, who's a writer for the Arizona Republic. And if you Google his name, you can find it. But he wrote about how back in 2011, the defense was asking for these emails and text messages from the government because the defense didn't have direct access to them. And basically what Detective Flores said, you know what, I saw these emails and they don't matter. They're irrelevant. You don't really need to know them for whatever reason. And obviously they do matter, right? And so we have a case. What we have here is the prosecution, the state of Arizona. This is a state of 6 million people versus one person trying to send that one person to death row and then calling her a liar, calling her a cold-blooded murderer, a sociopath, a psychopath, all these various epithets you want to use, and then denying her the opportunity to present evidence in her own defense. That, as far as I'm concerned, is as bad as anything that ever happened under Stalin or in communist China right now or Iraq under Saddam Hussein. How much worse does it get than that?
That is really worse. Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, that's the worst that, you know, it could be called. And off the air, you told me that, you know, you felt before coming here to America that this was, quote, the land of the free and the home of the brave, and now you kind of feel like you were misled. Is that accurate?
Not that I was misled. Well, no. I mean, when I came here, my folks immigrated here in 1980, so it's still a different country. It was before the rise of the neoliberal state. But in the past, you know, let's say 20, 30 years, we've had an incarceration rate that skyrocketed out of proportion with other industrialized nations. And Americans don't realize that. And what we have a foreign policy where we kind of say, you know, we're going to force democracy down your throat at the tip of a Tomahawk cruise missile and a smart bomb because, you know, we want to spread an American democracy. And that's great, you know, spread American democracy. But how about giving it to our own citizens? What does that mean? How about the fact that we have 60% of the people who are in our American prisons are nonviolent offenders. How about the fact that we have people who go to prison who pose absolutely no threat to anybody? Essentially, what we've done in this country is we've made it a crime to be poor. And I'm not talking about Jody Arias. I'm talking about our criminal justice system in general. We've made it a crime to be poor. And children growing up in inner cities are essentially growing up in a third world country. And that's,
yeah,
it's disappointing. We have a country that's – it's a land of factory prisons. We have a system where people make money by keeping Americans, by keeping fellow citizens in custody. And it's horrid. And I wish, I hope there's going to be future generations of reporters, maybe like you and other journalists, who are going to make an effort to change that.
Thank you for that last comment. I appreciate it.
No, but, I'm sincere. I hope there's going to be more discussion about factory prisons and what I call our prison democracy.
Yeah, but I also wanted to say this witness, what is her name, Alice, I think she's very likable. I saw the Nancy Grace mysteries and somebody, or one of those silly shows that they put on Eastern, and they were talking that she is very likable to the jurors. And she also worked for the prosecution side in other cases and the defense. And she's not going to get up there and say bullshit.
No, I completely agree with that assessment. She is a very low-key, matter-of-fact witness. And as I said before, previously, and I think Mr. Sherman and Mr. Herman said the same thing, is imagine if Juan Martinez, whoever was prosecuting this case, had that same demeanor. Imagine if he approached the prosecution of Ms. Arias with the same demeanor that Ms. LaValette has been testifying to. Imagine how much of a different case this would be, right? But that's what I want to see from government witnesses, that sort of demeanor. This is not about having a dog in this fight. This is not about proving how smart or how tough or how creative or how aggressive you are. This is about putting all the facts in front of the jury and letting them decide. And I hope that when this trial is over, somebody asks these jurors and ask them, how do you feel about the fact that Mr. Prosecutor was objecting to introducing these emails and that the defense had so much trouble to get him? Would you really want to be deciding whether or not you're going to send somebody to death row without all the facts in front of you? And my guess is most, you know, red-blooded Americans who are patriotic would say, no, give us all the facts and let us decide.
See, and the way he screams at all these witnesses, it just doesn't feel good. You know what I mean? Even if he's right, he doesn't have to scream at all the witnesses. He looks very stupid doing it. He looks like he's trying to make up a show there. It doesn't look good at all. And we were talking offline that David Walgreen, who prosecuted Conrad Murray in the case against Michael Jackson, what a difference of two prosecutors. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I would completely agree. I would completely agree. And the point I made, too, is on my blog, is if you look at Justice Jackson, 60 years ago, was prosecuting the Nazis from Nazi Germany, including Hermann Göring, and he had a low-key, matter-of-fact demeanor. And, again, the point is what prosecutors do is a civics lesson. Even if, hypothetically, and I don't think this is the case, but even if it leads to fewer convictions, prosecutors are teaching the public how to behave and what is appropriate behavior in a democracy. And what Mr. Martinez is doing is showing us that being a loudmouth, aggressive, yelling, pointing your finger, and being disruptive and impolite is how people ought to behave in our country. And I think it's a bad lesson. Having said that, though, not only is it a bad lesson, I think it's counterproductive. I think the prosecutor you mentioned in the Conrad Murray case would have a much better chance of getting a conviction against Ms. Arias than Mr. Martinez has so far.
Okay, I want to play you this clip of Jody Arias as a victim of abuse, and we'll come back and talk about it on the other side.
He had his hands around my neck, and he was banging my head on the carpet.
So you had sex behind closed doors and he beat you behind closed doors?
A lot of women have no proof of physical abuse because they haven't reported.
So why not just break up with him?
I liked him, so I wasn't going to break up with him.
I'm game for, like, almost everything you come up with.
Would it be fair to say that he had an all-access pass to your body?
Yes. I wanted to do what he wanted to do.
You're bad. You make me feel so dirty.
Week, Jodi Arias' defense team tried to convince jurors again that her ex-boyfriend, Travis Alexander, abused her. Psychotherapist and domestic violence expert Alice LaViolette testified. She says Travis Alexander's friends told Jodi that he had a history of abusing women. HLN host Vinnie Politan, criminal defense attorney Joey Jackson, joined me now. Good to see you both.
Good to see you.
Vinnie, I'll start with you. Is this all hearsay? This is coming from Jodi's mouth, and she's been proven a liar.
Yeah, well, this is the biggest problem they have, these experts. They have to rely upon what Jodi Arias is telling them.
Mm-hmm.
They have to believe her to a certain extent. And I don't know, from the way the jury was questioning Jodi Arias, I don't think the jury believes her. So that's a huge obstacle in this case.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. Joey, 18 days on the stand, and what I didn't see from her, we don't know if she was abused, she's saying she was. I never saw fear or got the sense from her that she was afraid.
And that's the critical point, because you could have any expert witness testify, and this has been a good one, Vinny. I think this expert witness has been pretty credible.
She hasn't been cross-examined yet.
Right, she hasn't been cross-examined. But even if this expert talks about abusive patterns and everything else, this expert has to get to what you bring up, Susan, fear that at the critical moment, irrespective of whether you were abused, were you in such fear that it justified the killing? I haven't seen that yet. That's the problem.
LaViolette, though, the expert, says usually domestic violence situations aren't reported to police. We've heard that before. Listen to her.
A lot of women have no proof of physical abuse because they haven't reported. You're not wanting to get your partner in trouble, so you don't make the report. You don't tell anybody. You don't, and you lie about what happened in a medical report.
All right, that is a strong point to bring up. But not only did she not report it, Vinny, but we heard sex tapes where it seems as though she's going along with Travis.
Yeah, and the other part of this is this relationship, when they were dating, they didn't live in the same state. They didn't live together. They didn't cohabitate. When they got together, all these pictures we see, these are trips that they took together. I mean, this is it's made up. It's made up because she had one story she couldn't go with. She had the second story she couldn't go with. This is all they were left with. And that's why I think real domestic violence victims should be insulted by what's happening in that courtroom. And I, you know, that's my point of view, my perspective, me judging her on what she has said.
And I have heard that they are insulted, saying, look, this gives the people who are abused a bad name. Let's talk about the jurors, Joey. They have a lot of work to do. Do you think deliberations will be hard? Think about her testimony on the stand. When we see flashbacks to Jodi Arias on the stand, I even forget what she said. How do you keep this all together?
Well, you know, I think this is unique. Why? Because they get to participate, Susan. They're asking questions constantly. What does it do? It focuses them. In other jurisdictions, like New York, we have to wait for juror questions till they're deliberating. Then they come out with it. So I think it really keeps them in tune to the process. I think it narrows their thinking, not in a bad way, but just focuses them on what specifically they're concerned about. So when they get to the deliberation room, I think they're all maybe on different pages, but of, you know, similar mind with regard to what's important.
Yeah, it is a unique situation. The jurors really getting to participate. And guys, this is far from over. We have a long way to go.
Far from over. What is it?
I mean, are we in April yet? I don't even know what.
What month is it? What time is it?
It might be June before this thing ends.
It could go to May.
Wow. All right, Vinnie Politan, Joey Jackson. Thank you.
Pleasure, Susan. Always.
Okay, well, the thing is that they think the witness is very credible. And what is your thought on Vinnie Politan? He didn't seem to like Jodi one bit.
You know what? I'm glad you asked me that because I don't want to use the actual words. I would want to describe him, but he's a caricature. He's not a real person.
Casey Anthony, he became, a different person, for lack of a better word. He became not a regular journalist. He became a showman, if you will. Years ago, I've been watching him for a while. He was a good guy to root for, but since the verdict of Casey Anthony, he became very different. And I've had a lot of callers tell me that, and I've had, you know, just friends tell me that. So, but your thoughts on Mr. Powelton?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a real person. I can't believe that somebody who says what he's saying genuinely believes that. So, you know, maybe because it's Easter, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt in saying he's doing it as a show. Maybe he really is a better person than he's presenting. But if he really believes what he is saying, then he's a cynic. He is just a hateful person who thinks automatically the worst of people and has no joy of life. And I don't want to listen to anybody like that. That's about as delicately as I can put it.
Yeah, and I just mentioned the other guy there who was there with Joe Jackson. He's a great guy. He's been on my show. And being honest, I really had nothing wrong with what he had to say during that interview. The other gentleman that was on
there. Most of the other people on there, well, I'm going
to
say
I just meant that particular soundbite we just heard. You had the lady, and you had Vinny, and you had Joey. And I was just pointing out that Joey does a great job. He's a defense attorney here in New York, and he's very fair.
From that clip that I heard, I would completely agree with you, especially in comparison with Vinny. I mean, he seems like, well, anybody in comparison with Vinny is going to sound like a rational person. That's the best I can put it. He's just a hater. It's that simple. He's a hateful cynic, and I don't want to hear anything else he ever has to say about anything. I don't care if it's about college basketball. I don't want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. that is totally true. Also, we had Mr. Dr. Samuel, and basically I was watching Nancy Grace Mysteries, and she made this doctor sound so bad. Like, you would have thought that he went into a bank and robbed a store. Like, you know, the fact that he bartered or something like that, or, you know, was so horrific. Just, you know, she made him out to be so evil. I mean, I don't think he's that evil. And I think he's genuine in a lot of ways. I didn't find him as bad as a lot of people are trying to portray him.
You know, what Miss Nancy Grace is she's an ideologue, too. She's in the same sort of category as Vinnie Politan. And I thought before, you know, maybe she's really a secret anarchist. Maybe she's really trying to bring down the end of the world by brainwashing prosecutors into thinking they have stronger cases than they really do. And I don't know if I told you this last week, but during the course of the Casey Anthony trial, a friend of mine who's a lawyer told me that he thought that the prosecutors in that case only charged Casey Anthony with first-degree murder because they were listening to Nancy Grace every night saying the first-degree murder charge was a slam dunk, and they refused to instruct the jury on lesser included, and that they would have gotten her convicted on maybe even something like manslaughter or second-degree murder if the prosecutors hadn't listened to Nancy Grace. And I said this a number of times on Twitter. I think Jody Arias should write Nancy Grace a thank-you note, because maybe Mr. Martinez is watching her and has fallen for the Nancy Grace effect and is going over the top, and that might end up getting her a walk. Might end up getting her a walk, or at least lesser charges than she would have been convicted with another prosecutor who was more pedestrian or matter of fact.
What were you thinking?
I was going to say, I am not a fan of Nancy Grace. It is despicable. Listening to Nancy Grace and Vinnie Politan, it almost reminds me of when my parents talked about the Communist Party 60 years ago in Yugoslavia, and you had these ideologues who kind of towed the party line at every discussion, and any sort of dialogue or discussion or actual reasonable discussion was outlawed because it violated party dogma. And that's the sense that I get from Vinnie Politan and Nancy Grace. It's not necessarily about politics, but it's the same sort of mindset.
And back in 2005, when Michael Jackson was on trial, she almost wished he burned it out. And then last year with the Dr. Murray trial, she was actually quoted as saying, poor Michael Jackson, you know, and saying it's very sincere. And I'm saying to myself, she's ripping the hell out of him back in 05, and now she's saying, you know, now she's being so hypocritical. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people know this, but the Georgia Supreme Court is not very big fans of her, and I don't know the exact words that they use, but they've used some pretty strong language to describe her, to criticize her in written opinions when she was a prosecutor. So all these people out there, these spectators who are watching Nancy Grace and think this is how prosecutors ought to behave, or this is what prosecutors should be saying, you know, might want to take a second look at that and really evaluate whether or not Nancy Grace is a role model for people. I don't think she is. I don't think she's a role model for our public, or should be a role model for our public.
Oh, no question. I mean, she, do you remember the episode where she had the mother that was being accused only of killing the daughter? The next day, the mother commits suicide.
You know, that was probably a couple of years ago. I vaguely remember that.
Right. And, we don't know, for back of, you know, lack of a better word, what happened with that individual. But for her to say that, it's just out of line.
What she is basically saying every single night she goes on TV is she is smarter and wiser and more educated and more clairvoyant, if that's even a phrase, but more clairvoyant than our founding fathers. She knows better how our country's criminal justice system should work than our founding fathers realized 200 years ago, and all the lawyers, judges, and professors who have ever lived in the past 200 years have shaped this system. She's smarter than all of them combined. And you know what? The world would just be a better place if we just gave her the keys to the car and let her run everything. That's essentially what she's saying. And people, you know, some people I think are silly and simple enough to buy into it.
Okay, so what do you expect this week? No court tomorrow. I don't know why, but maybe do you know why the court is dark tomorrow?
I believe it's back on Tuesday at 10:30.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm just saying, do you have any insight into why court is dark tomorrow?
What I heard is that maybe Judge Stevens is sick, or that somebody's sick. I don't know the exact details other than what's in mass media. I wouldn't really be able to give you any insight one way or the other.
When do you honestly think? Well, okay, let's go. Let's go through the timeline. We have one more witness for the defense, right?
Correct.
Then we have the juror questions. So right there, I think that would be two weeks of this jury questions alone, and the witness. Would you agree? Because it's only a three-day week.
The jury asks their questions after each witness. So
right.
I don't think we're going to have.
Right, but we're going to have cross-examination after direct of this last witness of the defense. So, and they have to wrap up the direct. So I would say that would take to wrap up direct. I think that would be at least one more day, would you say?
Yes, I think I agree with that.
Okay. Then we have cross-examination with Juan Martinez, and that would take probably, I would say with him, it could take a day or 2 days. What do you say about sound?
I think it'll take at least as long as a direct examination was.
Okay. Then you have the jury questions.
Well, then you have redirect. Then the defense gets to ask the witness questions to clear up whatever came up during cross-examination, and then you would have jury questions.
Right, okay. So, with that part of that, when do you think the witness will be off?
Next week.
About a week of next week or Wednesday?
Yeah, next week sometime.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we never really know for sure.
And the thing to realize, too, about trials is when they set a full day for trial, that's not really that much time. It's only, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours at the most. A full day of trial is going to be 5 hours of actual trial time at most.
Okay. Then we have a rebuttal from the state. We're expecting that, right?
I can't comment on that. I'm not aware of.
Well, typically that's what we would have in a normal trial, correct?
If they have rebuttal witnesses, if you're asking me, do I know specifically that they have one? I do not know, but they just only had an opportunity to present a rebuttal case after the defense rests.
Well, I believe I heard Jink Dusora say that they're going to bring people from Walmart to rebut what Jody said on the stand, which is very
stupid. That's not stupid. That's pathetic. If you're going to send somebody to death row with a Walmart receipt and witnesses for a remark, isn't that pathetic? And I hope the listeners realize here that I'm not, you know, I have no special attachment to the Jody Arias defense. I know Ms. Wilmot. I think she's a wonderful person, a wonderful lawyer. But I want to see justice done, and justice done to me is all the facts and evidence before the jury without bias or without histrionics, without drama. And that's absolutely not what happened here.
So well, basically, really is, you want the Constitution to work, right?
Yeah, I mean, sending somebody to death row with a Walmart receipt, is that how low they're... Dude, so this is what I understand from the prosecution. He wants receipts from Walmart into evidence, but he doesn't want 8,000 emails pointing to the fact that Mr. Alexander may have been an abuser and at one point called himself a bit of a sociopath. That he doesn't want in, but he wants the Walmart receipts into evidence. That's pathetic.
That's all that's been leaked to the media, as far as we know, right? Is the email about him saying some not-so-kind things to a girl?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this is actually email exchanges between Mr. Alexander and his friends in California.
Okay, I want you to hear the Juan Martinez battling out with the doctor. And tell me what you think of Dr. Samuels in terms of him defending himself. Let's take a listen and we'll comment on the other side.
Sir, isn't it true that on a separate occasion you actually provided the defendant with a gift?
No.
Well, sir, do you remember providing her with a book called Erroneous Zone?
Yes.
And that was something that you provided to her, right?
It was mailed to her, yes.
Which means you provided it to her, correct?
Yes.
And you provided it to her because at that point you believed that she was depressed, right?
No.
Well, let's take a look at what your testimony was. See if this refreshes your memory. And this self-help book talks about positive and practical advice for breaking free from the trap of negative thinking and enjoying life to the fullest, right?
Yes, that was for her low self-esteem.
It also talks about if you're plagued by guilt or worry and find yourself unwittingly falling into the same old destructive patterns, then Erroneous Zone is the book for you, right?
Yes.
And you would agree that if you were there to do that, and now you're trying to help her, there seems to be a little bit of the blurring of the lines there. Don't you agree?
No, I don't.
Well, on the one hand, you want to help her, don't you? By giving her that self-help book. Yes or no?
Yes, it wouldn't be bad. Yes, I helped her.
And on the other hand, you're to provide an impartial evaluation in this case, right? That's what the code says, right?
I didn't read the book to her. I sent her the book.
Right. But you were the one that actually provided it to her so that she could read it, right?
Yes, she was unable to get it on her own.
I'm not asking whether or not she could get it on her own. The fact that she couldn't get it on her own, that made you upset enough to go out and buy it for her, right?
No, it didn't make me upset. I did what I did for many people and recommended it.
Well, I'm not asking about many people. I'm asking about this particular case. Because you said that she couldn't get it, you went out of your way to get it, and then send it to her, right?
Correct.
That required you to go buy the book, right?
Yes.
That required you to put it in whatever container there was and mail it to her, right?
No, I ordered it online.
You ordered it online. Once you received it, it went to her, correct?
It was sent directly to her through Amazon.
And when you ordered it online, that's money coming out of your pocket, right?
Yes.
So now, not only are you sending her something, you're, in a sense, giving her money, aren't you?
Not, didn't look at it that way. I gave her a book.
Well, you're not looking at it that way, but that's what happens. You gave her money, and you gave her a book that cost you money, right?
Yes.
How much did that book cost you?
$9.
So here you are buying her a gift that's $9, right?
No, it was not a gift.
Oh, did she give it back to you?
She offered it back to me.
No, I'm not asking you if she offered it back to you. She never gave it back to you, right?
I didn't ask for it back.
Did I ask you whether or not you asked for it back?
So what are you asking?
I'm asking you whether or not she, isn't it true that she never gave it back to you, right?
She offered it back to me.
I'm not asking you whether or not she offered it to you. You understand that's not my question. You understand that, right?
Yes.
My question is, isn't it true that the book was never returned to you?
Correct.
And so you did this because you believed, or for whatever reason, you started to like her, right?
No.
Oh, so you dislike her?
I didn't say that either.
So you do like her, then?
I can't answer that question, true yes or no.
Well, why not? You spent how many? You went to see her on 12 separate occasions, right?
Depends what you mean by like.
I'm asking you, isn't it true that you went to see her on 12 separate occasions,
as
right?
Part of my role to evaluate her, yes.
Yes or no? You did go see her on 12 separate occasions, correct?
Yes.
And you spent many hours with her, right?
Yes.
And you talked about a variety of things, right?
Yes.
Isn't it true that even after all this time, after all these visits, the reason you got her this book, you're saying is just because there was no reason.
There was a reason.
And the reason was that you wanted to give her something, right?
No.
Well, you did give her something, didn't you?
Yes.
And there is a code of ethics, correct?
Yes.
And that code of ethics prohibits you from providing gifts to somebody like the defendant, doesn't it?
It wasn't a gift.
Sir, isn't it true that it went over and it got to her, didn't it?
She was suicidal.
I'm not asking you whether or not she was suicidal. Right? Am I asking you that?
No, you're not.
And if she was suicidal, you're not the treating physician, are you?
I'm not treating her.
Well, if she was suicidal, it was somebody else's responsibility to take care of it, right?
Then, can we ask the state not to yell at the witness? Not necessary.
And in this particular case, you told us that you thought the defendant was suicidal, right?
She was telling us that she was
no,
going to kill herself.
Sir. Now you're changing the story because now you're saying she was telling you. Sir, didn't you tell us just minutes ago that she was suicidal?
She told us she was suicidal.
I understand that's what you're saying now. I'm asking you to think. You don't have any memory problems, do you?
No.
I'm asking you to think back to maybe 5 minutes ago. And 5 minutes ago, isn't it true that you told us when I was asking you about the gift? You told us, well, she was suicidal. Do you remember that spontaneous statement coming from you?
Yes, but I didn't mean that she was going to kill herself right there. She had told everyone.
Sir, I'm asking you if you remember the statement, yes or no.
You're not allowing me to explain this.
Counsel, one at a time.
What a heated showdown that was. Your thought process on Mr. Juan Martinez, and how many times is he going to say, right, right, right?
Yeah, what he's doing is basically what a lot of lawyers are taught to do during cross-examination is make every question leading, don't give the witness an opportunity to explain, and then save whatever ultimate point you have for closing argument when nobody can come back and contradict you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing that. And, you know, maybe under some circumstances that's appropriate, let's say, you know, in a divorce or, you know, even some criminal cases. I think it's completely inappropriate, though, in a criminal case like this one where somebody may go to death row, and a defendant has the right to confront her accusers. And he did that with Ms. Arias, and he's doing now with Dr. Samuels, and he's insisting on yes or no answers. And when I hear that, you know, when I hear yes or no, answer the question yes or no, you know, again, I hark back to the communists. I hark back to Nazi Germany. You know, I'm thinking the Gestapo banging down the door and saying, answer the question, yes or no. You know, putting words in the mouths of witnesses. And I would hope that's not appropriate in this country, particularly when the charges are so severe. And at certain points, listening to the cross-examination, I took some notes here, it got a little silly. It almost got a little silly.
It did.
Because listening...
Yeah, because I said to him, you don't have a memory problem, do you? I said that was way out of line.
Yeah, he's treating her, I'm sorry, he's treating Dr. Samuels like he's the defendant and he's accused of first-degree murder. But with the way he was talking, the way he was building up the questions, you know, if I didn't know any better, I'm listening to him like, wow, what did this doctor do? You know, did he buy her a Lamborghini? Did he buy her a Rolex? You know, did he buy her, around the world cruise? No, he bought her a $9 book so she wouldn't commit suicide. That's the smoking gun that he has to prove that he has, that Dr. Samuels has feelings for Mysterious. And then another point.
Yeah, I don't have the soundbite of that, but he did in fact say, quote, you have feelings for Mysterious, right?
Yeah, and this is something I was going to mention, too, and I see this a lot on Twitter, and it's blatant sexism. The prosecution's case is predicated on that men can't control themselves around Miss Arias. And it's kind of reverse discrimination. It's reverse sexism because it's directed at men. And so as a man, I'm insulted that this doctor who's a professional, an older man, maybe he's a father or a grandfather, that somehow he can't control his impulses to do an objective evaluation of Miss Arias because she's so attractive. And I personally, just regardless of what the facts are in this case, I, as a professional lawyer who works with, who's defending female clients, I find that insulting. I find that very insulting. And I'm wondering if some of the men on the jury may find that implication insulting, that just because he's a man and she's a woman, that he's going to lose, he's going to throw his career away just because of that simple fact. And I see those comments a lot on Twitter, too. You know, a lot of people saying that the men in Jodi Arias' lives are manipulated to her because they can't think of anything other than their attraction for her. And it's insulting, it's derogatory, and it's sexist. And one of the things Mr. Martinez, the point he was making was about you visited her 12 times, the implication being he visited her 12 times because he had feelings for her, but he visited her 12 times because that was his job. He spent 30 hours with her.
Yeah, the line.
Yeah, and then on the one hand, he criticizes Mr. Samuels for not knowing enough about her, and then on the other hand, he criticizes him for spending this much time for her. He's trying to have it all ways. So I think
could read into a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that Mr. Martinez is doing.
But don't you find being a man, it's insulting that a prosecutor's line of questioning is appropriate to infer that an older gentleman, a professional who's been a doctor for so long, can't control, you know, basic drives in the face of an attractive woman? That I just personally find that repugnant and insulting.
Yeah, it was such a reach, you know, to even question about a lousy $9 book that has no bearing on him or her, you know, in terms of any type of relationship. I mean, it's not like he sent her a phone card or something like that where they could talk or anything like that. You know, it was a simple $9 book that he was never going to see it again. And it didn't really have any relevance to him liking her, most importantly, or having feelings.
No, you know, like I said last week, if a witness has bias, that's certainly relevant to bring up. But this is not bias. This is not bias at all. This is an older profession who's been in the practice for a while, not wanting to see somebody commit suicide. Does anybody have any doubt that was his motivation for giving her that book? Does anybody think, no, the real reason he gave her that book was that he wanted to get it in her pants? Does anybody in their right mind think that's the real reason he gave her that book? I can't imagine anybody does.
I know. I mean, think about that logically. I don't think one person on the jury would have to think that.
Maybe Benny Politan and Nancy Grace, other than them, and Mr.
Yeah.
Martinez.
Well, I think, yeah, the company HLN thinks that, you know, whether Vinny and Nancy think it, you know, to themselves, I doubt it. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see with this case. It's definitely it's definitely a very interesting case. It's definitely educational. But like you said before, it's showing me up-and-coming people that want to be a good prosecutor. What they're seeing on national television is a jerk-off in Juan Martinez, signing autographs, saying the things that he did to the doctor, saying the things to her when she was weeping on the stand, getting in her face, grilling her. I mean, I don't think that he just put on a show. I mean, it's so wrong, I thought.
Yeah, and then about signing the autographs, and I think I saw another gentleman on Twitter, somebody I follow, made a very good point. How does, if Mr. Juan Martinez is the spokesman for the victim, Travis Alexander, and his job is to show respect for Travis Alexander and his family.
Right.
How does Juan Martinez do that by signing a cane? How exactly is Mr. Martinez signing a cane and posing for pictures and signing autographs showing respect for the victim and his family?
That's a great point. That's a wonderful point.
I wish I had come up with it. I can't take credit for it. I retweeted it, but I think it's an excellent point. It doesn't. Would you want to see the judge signing cane or autographs or taking pictures? Would you want to see the judge doing that? But the judge and the prosecutor have the exact same role. It's their ministers of justice. They're responsible to the people, not to themselves or their own ego.
Totally, totally. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And you're expecting a murder, too? Is that what you're hoping, expecting?
No. She should have been, the pop count should have been murdered, too. I'm going out on a limb now. I'm saying manslaughter.
Wow. I think that would be just as shocking to HLN, if not more, than when Casey Anthony was acquitted.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But you know what? I think Miss Arias should have never been charged with first-degree murder. Again, I've said this a million times. The state has never presented a coherent theory proving premeditation beyond a reasonable doubt. They've thrown spaghetti against the wall. It's like the difference when you know when you go to a restaurant and somebody tells you you're going to have a nice fancy meal and you sit at a table and then you're expecting a plate of pasta delivered to your table and then said the waiter points to the wall and says, see those strands? That's your dinner tonight. And that's exactly what what the prosecutor has done. He has thrown spaghetti against the wall, and that's shock value. That's all that is shock value.
And they're always showing on HLN how they're doing a handstand. Like, it's such a big deal. I mean, I'm sure people, you know, after the stress of being, you know, in a room for how many hours she was in, you know, she was maybe just letting out some steam, albeit we don't see it from everyone, but I'm sure it happened before.
Well, you know, that's what you've seen throughout this trial, even before that video was shown, was all these people. We're not even talking about psychologists or psychotherapists. We're talking about lawyers or reporters who kind of all of a sudden can, you know, read minds. They're all of a sudden these expert body language interpreters and human lie detectors that they can watch somebody for 30 seconds and figure out exactly everything that person has ever thought or felt. And not about just about Miss Arias, but I've heard this constantly.
Oh, they make things. The way they move.
They know.
They're trying to say this, the way she moves her eyes, this is what she's trying to say. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, and they say that about the jury, too. And they say, well, the jurors, you know, they're not looking this way. They're looking at the clock or, you know, they picked up the water cup with their left hand, not with their right hand. And this question means that they don't believe her. Anything that happens in that courtroom, any small thing, it could be, you know, the clock is 1 second slow. To them, is proof positive that Miss Arias is guilty of first degree murder. It's a carnival atmosphere, and that's sad that our criminal justice system has degraded to that level.
Totally. And HLN, I'll tell you, if they had their druthers, this would end the Memorial Day weekend, because coming up in June is the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, Mr. Zimmerman, he absolutely should never have been charged with any crime. Now, my political leanings, I'm almost you know, borderline socialist, social democrat. So it's all my friends or the people who I talk to, you know, have it out for Mr. Zimmerman. And I'm not a fan of guns. I'm a big believer in gun control. But the way the law is written in Florida, Mr. Zimmerman is not guilty of any crime. Now, he's guilty of stupidity. He's guilty of not being very articulate and kind of having an odd behavior or way of expressing himself. And he's had a lot of bad luck. But he is not guilty of first-degree murder. And not only is he not guilty of it, there's no probable cause for it. He should have never, ever been charged with it. And I hope, my hope is he's found not guilty of all the crimes, and he sues everybody for defamation and slander all over media who's been basically calling him a cold-blooded murderer. Because that's, you know, he's a lot of things, but he is not a murderer. Or at least this case does not prove he's a murderer.
And what did you think of Obama actually getting himself involved with this?
It's depressing. You would think somebody who was a constitutional law expert, somebody who was a community activist, that to me means somebody who understands the struggle that an individual may have when they're found on the wrong side of a law. You would think he would have enough sense to keep his mouth shut, right? Just keep your mouth shut. You have no business talking about George Zimmerman versus the state of Florida. What if one of those jurors who doesn't say anything during voir dire has, you know, believes everything President Obama says or gives him the benefit of the doubt and hears about what Mr. Obama said? How is Mr. Zimmerman supposed to get a fair trial when the President of the United States weighs in on it? It's ridiculous that he had anything to say about it. It's disappointing, to say the least, because, you know, my political leanings are more in line with Mr. Obama than the other side.
Yeah, I think it was totally out of line for him to even mention it, because at this point when he mentioned it, George wasn't even charged. I think he said something along the lines of, if I had a son, that's how he would turn up, something like that. Just really, go ahead.
You know what I was going to make the point, too, is a lot of civil rights activists were calling for the prosecution of Mr. Zimmerman, and that's unfortunate because there's no segment of our population that has suffered more unjustly at the hands of an overbearing prosecution and criminal justice system than African-American males. And maybe Mr. Obama should have said, you know, if I had a son, he might actually be wrongly accused of a crime that he didn't commit. And maybe that is the discussion we should be having, because it's so disappointing to have these civil rights activists who talk about social justice and civil rights calling for the prosecution of somebody when so many of their own people are wrongly behind bars. That's what's disappointing.
What is the average of wrong conviction, would you say, in Arizona? Do you know?
No, nobody's going to know that. I can tell you that if somebody's convicted of a crime, whether it's legitimate or illegitimate, regardless of the circumstances, once you're charged by the government, you will be convicted of something almost invariably without, there's some exceptions, certainly, but the conviction rate in Maricopa County is something like 90%, 95%. So once somebody's charged, once the police think somebody's guilty of a crime, the conviction rate is 95%. So whatever the percentage of mistakes that the police make is going to be the percentage of wrongful convictions.
Oh, that's totally interesting. Let me play you a clip of this George Zimmerman trial and something going wrong with this witness for the prosecution. Take a listen.
Kelly's court is back in session on the docket today, a potential bombshell ahead of the George Zimmerman murder trial, which is scheduled for June. With the defense now saying the state's most important witness, the only ear witness to the confrontation between the two men at issue, she's the woman identified as Trayvon Martin's girlfriend, has been caught in a lie and a big one. And that could cast doubt on the rest of her testimony in this case, including what she told prosecutors about a phone call she had with the victim, Trayvon Martin, right before he was shot and killed by Zimmerman, a neighborhood watchman.
I called Trayvon, what's going on, what's going on?
This is you saying,
yeah.
Okay.
Then I'll call him, he'll
right.
answer.
No answer from Trayvon.
Yeah. It's there. I hear it's something like bump. You can hear that Trayvon bump. Somebody bumped Trayvon. So I can hear the grass.
Arthur Idala is a former prosecutor and now defense attorney. Jonas Bilbor has the same pedigree. And so that's her testimony. She's going to testify, we believe, at trial that she witnessed the whole thing, heard the whole thing, the confrontation, and most critically, that she says Trayvon said to Zimmerman, "Why are you following me?" And Zimmerman's testimony is he was not following Trayvon. The two bumped into each other after an earlier thing, and that he was not stalking this kid or following this kid. Now we find out that she was caught in, they say, a lie, a mistake. You tell me what it is, but Jonna, what is the defense saying?
This is big, Megan. So the defense is basically saying, look, we've got one star witness here because there are no eyewitnesses, right? We have an ear witness, as you had pointed out, who claims to be on the phone when this whole thing started. And the whole stand your ground defense stems on whether or not George Zimmerman was the aggressor here. And if you go by her, the girlfriend's testimony, it sort of it goes the other way. It, like, George Zimmerman was the one who was following Trayvon. This is big, but the lie that she told was she claimed that she was in the hospital on the day of Trayvon Martin's funeral. She was not. Now, why you lie about something like that is really unclear. It's kind of a strange lie, but it's a huge lie. It's not a mistake.
Why is it such
not
a huge lie?
Let me take it up with you, Arthur, because, you know, I see, okay, why is that such a huge lie? Because she was under oath when she told, she swore that she would did not go to that funeral because she was
I
at a
know.
Hospital. Then the defense asked for the medical records to prove it, and only then was it revealed that was a fabrication.
Mm-hmm. We're not in federal court. This is Martha Stewart or Roger Clemens, wherever you say a lie under oath. It's a crime. This is not
I
a very...
I'm saying it's a crime. It goes to her credibility.
But mm-hmm. Let me just say this, Megan. In the 1990s, when I was a prosecutor in Brooklyn, New York, when crime was rampant, if I lost every case when my star witness, who had a rap sheet that it was an inch thick, got caught in one lie, I'd lose every case. Jurors are not, don't hold witnesses to such a high degree regarding one lie or two lies, especially if it's something about that's inconsequential. Where were you at the time of the funeral? I think that this is something I was in the hospital.
I mean, it's not like I can't remember. I think I was busy that day. I was in the hospital is a pretty material difference from
a good
prosecutor. I was never in the hospital.
Your Honor, a good prosecutor is going to get over that without really breaking a sweat.
Jonna, you used to prosecute cases. Do you agree with that?
No, she is the main witness. Not only is she the main witness in favor of the state, but we have physical evidence on the defense side that she's going to have to counter with her testimony. And come on, if we can't believe what she's saying, Arthur, then why should the jury do that?
As you know, people don't walk onto the witness stand without being prepared by
perfect.
The prosecutor.
And they're not
and
perfect.
And the prosecutor
I get
will spend weeks preparing this woman, this young woman, to testify.
That's
they'll prepare
thing.
For cross-examination. She'll
I don't know how you can prepare her around
for.
This, although there is a question about whether she can say, I didn't go to the funeral, I was embarrassed, so I lied, but then, you know, under oath. Okay, but wait, the defense has also made a critical decision about stand your ground and whether they'll argue that law. We'll talk about that when we come back. All right, so Arthur and John are back with me now. So now the defense was supposed to have a stand-your-ground immunity hearing before the trial, which takes place in June. This is supposed to take place, I think, in April, where he could have gotten rid of this entire case if he convinced the judge that George Zimmerman could take advantage of Florida's stand-your-ground law, which has been very controversial in this case. Could he have used it in this situation? But in any event, it was a shot at a complete get-out-of-jail-free card. And, John, it sounds like he is not going to use it. He's just going to go right to the jury trial.
And I don't blame him one bit, Megan, because you know what? The defense is winning. And why give the prosecution two bites at the apple? Because George Zimmerman is going to have to testify at the immunity hearing, and he's going to have to testify at trial. If they're doing so well pre-trial, which they are, and since this case is going to boil down to George Zimmerman's testimony versus this ear witness slash Trayvon Martin's girlfriend's testimony, why should the defense risk putting George Zimmerman on the stand before the trial? They shouldn't.
It's another chance to get him off scot-free.
No judge has the guts to do that, Megan. No judge has the guts to do that.
Megan, I'm going
to
let you down. I'm going to make a profound statement. I agree 100% with my colleague.
Whoa!
I think the last statement is the truest one. Mm-hmm. It would take a tremendous amount of intestinal fortitude for a judge in this international case to say, yes, The facts are so clear that he was standing his ground. I'm dismissing the murder, the life imprisonment charges, who killed a young boy. I just don't think that they would, not with the evidence that's there. So he's already he's on the record with the whole bail hearing testimony. So he's going to be able to be impeached on that. He's going to be able to be impeached that they did this hearing. And then what he says at trial, it gives the prosecutor so many bites of the apple. You're worried about this young woman's getting caught up in a lie on one thing? He'll wind up getting caught up in a lie on 10 things because that's just human nature.
He may already be there because we took a look at the testimony. He gave his long testimonial to the police that's on camera, and you compare that to what he said at the bail hearing and so on. I mean, there are already some inconsistent statements on Zimmerman's side as well. But I don't know. I mean, it was like both of you guys are basically saying the judge is too chicken to throw the case out, even if he or she
believes
it.
That's reality.
Exactly.
I mean, are there some...
Look, throwing the judges under the bus.
It's just reality. It is the pressure from the media,
the
from politics.
Outcry.
It would just be...
What
I mean,
did you
could
do?
You,
officers of the court.
Have you ever watched O'Reilly's program where judges make these decisions and you're on there defending them?
Yeah. I gotta go. I gotta leave. That's it. Wrap.
Sorry.
Case dismissed.
Oh, Vlad, okay, very interesting piece of news there. What is your opinion on this potential damaging lie, I guess, under oath of this critical witness to this high-profile case?
Yeah, she may be a critical witness, and the lie itself, if in fact it was a lie, is unusual, but I don't see how it really contradicts what she claims to have heard over the phone. It seems like it's tangential. Maybe the only point one could make from it was that maybe she was trying to play herself off as an impartial witness. You know, she was his girlfriend.
Right.
But that wouldn't keep her from telling the truth to the point where she could say, you know what, I didn't even go to the funeral. You know, maybe something along those lines is using it to prove bias and future credibility. But beyond that, I don't see how important it is. It's bizarre. I don't see how she would lie about it, but unless there's something
under
more
oath.
To it, I don't. Yeah, it was under oath, but how much does that mean, really? I don't see what that really has to do with her testimony, other than maybe it's used to prove she has a bias. She's going to lie.
Well, interesting enough, the wife of Mrs. Zimmerman was charged with perjury for lying under oath. Well, no. She was charged for, I believe, something like they were in a jailhouse interview, and yes, it was perjury, and she didn't disclose the right amount or something like that. Legally, can this woman be charged?
Yeah, if the law is anything like it is in Arizona, then yeah, if you deliberately tell a false misleading statement under oath, then that's perjury. But again, she's a prosecution witness, so whether or not the prosecutor is actually going to charge their own star most important witness with a crime in a world-famous trial, I think that's highly unlikely. I don't think it's going to happen. And how much headway the defense can make with it as far as impeaching her statements during a trial, I don't know. I think they're going to have to tie it directly to some sort of issue with her credibility or some sort of bias to testify falsely.
You heard that they waived the stand your ground thing, right?
Right, I heard that little bit, a piece of information, yes.
Okay, what do you think of that whole, whatever it's called, stand your ground law? You like it, don't like it, not sure?
Arizona has a similar law for stand your ground. Basically, when it's a case of self-defense in your own home or motor vehicle, you don't have to – there's no duty to retreat. The common law rule that we inherited from the English was that in any case of self-defense for force to be justified, you first have to try to get away. If you can't get away, only then are you entitled to use deadly force. So that's a slight change from that law. As far as the hearing itself, having a stand your ground law hearing, it's not something Arizona does. But I have to say I agree with what both the commentators said in that little piece. First, Mr. Zimmerman is going to would have to testify at the stand your ground law hearing, and then he would have to testify at a trial. What you don't want to do is give a prosecutor an opportunity to cross-examine him at the hearing and then redo it again at the trial. That's a mistake to let the prosecutor have two bites at the apple. Second, what both those commentators said was exactly right. There is no way on earth a judge is going to dismiss this case after a stand your ground law hearing. It is impossible for a judge to do that. The political pressure and the pressure from the public would be too great. Even if the evidence was overwhelming that it was a justified shooting, there's no way a judge is going to dismiss this case. So they basically, the defense, from I understand the procedure, has no benefit from going through with a hearing pre-trial.
Absolutely. And but you feel that George will be acquitted based on the evidence?
Again,
that we
saw? Yeah, I'm not clairvoyant. I can't read into the future. All I can say is, you know, I believe in freedom. I believe in the good-heartedness of the American citizen, and that American citizens are freedom-loving idealists. And when they hear the evidence, the impartial evidence, they will acquit him. Maybe I'm an optimist. Maybe I'm a hopeless optimist. But I believe in the goodness of people, and that's why I do this job. I'm not a cynic. And prosecutors turn into cynics. Hopeful people turn into defense attorneys because we believe in the goodness of people.
Like they always say, a trial is a search for the truth. And let's hope we find out the truth in the upcoming trial.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, and I hope in Ms. Arias' case that all the evidence gets put in front of a jury. I don't want to harp on this, but, you know, if you want to convict somebody of first-degree murder and send them to death row, I'm opposed to the death penalty, but that is the law of the land, fine, send them. But just put the evidence out there. You know, apply it plainly. You know, make it obvious. We shouldn't be stretching the law, the letter of the law, the spirit of the law, or the facts or anything. This is not, despite what TV shows show, despite Law and Order, despite the practice, criminal trials is not a game. It's not matching wits. It's not a chess match. It's not gamesmanship. It's a search or an endeavor to find the truth. And unfortunately, that's kind of disappeared into the silly battle of wits that we're seeing in front of our eyes, of all places, of Phoenix.
Oh, I totally agree. Okay, before we get on out of here, let's give out your information about your blogs and websites and stuff.
Yeah, my blog is prisondemocracy.com. That's www.prisondemocracy.com. And I'm on Twitter. My Twitter avatar is VLGA, Victor Larry Golf Adam, VLGA. And I'm very active on Twitter.
Okay, Vlad, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe next week or something close to that, you'll come back on as the trial progresses.
Sounds good, man. It was a blast being on the show again and trashing HLN.
We got to come up with a better name for the headline news for HLN. Maybe we'll think something funny.
How about haters? Haters Leading Network, I don't know, something like that.
Something like that, exactly. Okay, friend, have a good week and a happy Easter.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Okay, folks, thank you for listening. Don't forget, tomorrow we will be back at you at 7 o'clock on East. We'll have Philly Computer, former WWE referee. And Wednesday, we will have Charles Linden. He is the expert on panic attacks, arachnophobia, and much, much more. Thursday, we'll have the one and only Pearl Jr. Friday, we'll have, Friday we're off. Sunday from SiriusXM, we'll have Andrew Bogish. All right, folks, let me leave you with 18 days of Jody. And, of course, I'd like you to follow me on Twitter, at King Jordan. And I thank everybody for listening. I'm going to leave you with, let's see what I should leave you with tonight. One first, let's see. You know what? I was going to do this, but, all right, let's go with Jody. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for listening to King Jordan. Radio.
The defense calls Jody Arias. Did you kill Travis Alexander on June 4th, 2008?
Yes, I did. He began to remove my clothes. I thought we were going to kiss and maybe heavily, but that would be the extent of it since this was the first time we were kissing. He lifted up my skirt, pulled down my underwear, and he unzipped his pants. I walked in and Travis was on the bed masturbating. He wanted me to dress up in a schoolgirl outfit with braids. I told him that I was for sure going to move, probably right after convention. And he made a few comments and we argued and the argument escalated and then he reached his right hand over to hit me. He spun me around and bent me over the desk and pressed up against me. I began to tell him things that I thought would comport with what their forensics would show.
What happened on June 4th? Why did you deny being there?
The main reason is because I was very ashamed of what had happened.
Didn't you just tell me previously that you knew that Mr. Alexander was dead?
It's hard to explain.
Ma'am, what is hard to explain about a person breathing or not breathing? When he was performing oral sex on you, that you said he sure knew what he was doing. Do you remember saying that on direct examination? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, doesn't it take one to know one? You actually called him Hottie Biscotti, correct?
Yes.
That is not your blood, right?
No, I don't think it is. Well, it's a good thing that nobody else reads this because I write right now that I love Travis Victor Alexander so completely that I don't know any other way to be.
While you were there at his home on June 4th, 2008, did you ever decide that you wanted to kill Mr. Alexander and leave him dead in the shower?
No, that was never my thought.
Did Travis's closet doors have locks on them?
I don't remember them having any locks.
If no, how did you have time to get the gun down if he was right behind you?
I don't know if he was right behind me or not. I just had the sense that he was chasing after me.
After all the lies you have told, why should we believe you now?
Lying isn't typically something I just do.
You were there, right?
Yes.
And so you fired the gun, you shot him in the head, and you killed him, right?
Objection, Your Honor. This character is the guilty.
Right?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.